Okay, this is case number 19-1534, Ramirez against the Department of Homeland Security. Ms. Holm.
May it please the court. This case concerns petitioner Mr. Ramirez's wrongful removal from his job as a Customs and Border Protection officer on a charge that he was unfit to carry a firearm. Mr. Ramirez's removal must be vacated for two reasons. First, the arbitrator determined that the agency's evidence, quote, fell technically short of preponderantly proving that CBPO Ramirez is currently unfit for CBP service, end quote. This determination conclusively resolved the issue before the arbitrator, and it was legal error for the arbitrator to then order Mr. Ramirez to undergo another psychiatric examination and to ultimately sustain the removal. Second.
I guess there's some question about the status of the arbitration when he ordered that other medical evaluation, and that is whether the decision that the arbitrator had made was an initial decision or was it a final decision, correct?
That's correct. And this court, after Mr. Ramirez petitioned for review of that interim award, the court found that that award was not final for purposes of taking jurisdiction over the petition. But the court expressly found in its opinion on the dismissal that Mr. Ramirez could obtain meaningful relief after a final decision on the claim that the arbitrator's ordering of another psychiatric examination was unlawful. So at this point, Mr. Ramirez has petitioned for review of the final decision, and he seeks that meaningful relief that the court expressly left open.
But isn't it fairly clear that what the arbitrator was doing, regardless of what precise language he used when he did it, is that he was saying, at this point, I don't think I have enough to sustain the government's case, but I want more evidence. And the additional evidence I want is to get another examination of Mr. Ramirez. And then when that was done, reconvened the proceedings and ultimately ruled his final ruling being in favor of the government. Why isn't that a fair characterization of what the arbitrator was doing, as opposed to having conclusively ruled against the government, as your argument suggests?
That may be a fair characterization of what the arbitrator was doing, but Mr. Ramirez's argument is that it was unlawful for the arbitrator to, after having determined that the evidence that the agency presented at a full evidentiary hearing did not satisfy the agency's burden, that at that point it was beyond the arbitrator's authority.
Are we really having a discussion about the exact words that the arbitrator used? That he didn't say, so far the government's evidence is not strong enough, I want more evidence. Had he said that, you wouldn't be making this argument, I take it.
I think there are a couple points, Your Honor. First of all, I think the words do matter. The arbitrator expressly invoked the preponderance of the evidence burden language and found that the evidence that the agency presented at a full evidentiary hearing was not enough to satisfy that burden. But even if the arbitrator hadn't used that language...
But then he could have said that and then said, so far. So, I mean... Are we really focusing on the absence of the word so far? Is that your argument, that without those words, it was over and there was no supplementation of the record that was possible? Notwithstanding that's what it was clear the arbitrator wanted to do.
Right. I'm not sure that the exact words after the arbitrator determined that the agency didn't carry its burden matter. There are a couple of reasons why I think, you know, even if the arbitrator hadn't used that language, that it would have been improper for the arbitrator to do what he did here. So of course, I think we've made it clear that it's the agency's burden to prove its charge by a preponderance of the evidence based on the evidence that it presents at the hearing when it asks the arbitrator to rule on the issues. And it makes sense that if it's the agency's burden and the agency doesn't carry that burden, the arbitrator should not give the agency a second bite at the apple, a second chance to prove its case, essentially. And I think point number two is that even if an arbitrator could order the production of new and existing evidence after the hearing was over, that's not exactly what happened here. Here, the arbitrator ordered the creation of entirely new evidence that didn't exist. And indeed, he ordered a compulsory psychiatric examination. I don't think the agency has cited any authority for the arbitrator to order an employee to undergo a psychiatric examination. That was certainly beyond the agency's authority.
Okay. Can you move to your due process argument? And this is specifically the MMPI examinations. And I'd like to for you to comment on whether Mr. Ramirez received copies of those, the results of the examinations or not, and what difference does it make? Is this the nature of your due process argument?
Yes, Judge Reyna. Mr. Ramirez did not receive copies of the firsthand MMPI results interpreted by Dr. Frederick. He did not receive the actual tests that he took that were sent to Dr. Frederick for interpretation. And his lack of access to that evidence is the basis for the due process violation. The whole removal decision sort of traces back to that evidence. And here's why. So the removal decision, which is at page 85 of the appendix, states that the basis for the loss of Mr. Ramirez's ability to carry a weapon are, quote, the medical findings which found that he is restricted from any weapons carrying positions and the restrictions are permanent. So if you look back to those medical findings that the agency referred to there, it's Dr. Namias's report at pages 77 to 78 of the appendix, where Dr. Namias says, quote, because the employee was not cooperative, I recommend the employee be restricted from any weapons carrying position. And if you look through Dr. Namias's report, there really isn't any reference to Mr. Ramirez's failure to cooperate except for that small, short, secondhand summary of what Dr. Frederick found were the results of the MMPI tests. If Mr. Ramirez
Dr. Namias testified at the hearing on several occasions that his own conclusion was that Mr. Ramirez was not being forthcoming and cooperative. Why isn't that enough right there to establish the predicate for his finding, quite apart from Dr. Frederick, in his report?
Two responses to that, Your Honor. First of all, an employee is entitled to due process at each stage of the removal proceedings. And so because Mr. Ramirez was not granted access to the MMPI evidence at the initial stage, at the agency's decision to remove him, that itself renders the removal a nullity and requires Mr. Ramirez to be reinstated. Second of all, at the arbitration hearing, it is true that Dr. Namias testified about Mr. Ramirez's failure to cooperate, but I think those findings don't have any bearing on the charge that was before the agency, the charge that the arbitrator was authorized to rule on. The agency charged Mr. Ramirez with failure to maintain a condition of employment, fitness to carry a firearm. And so his cooperation doesn't have a bearing on the charge before him.
Well, it did as far as Dr. Namias was concerned, because he said it was integral to his decision that this was not a risk that he was prepared to endorse, putting a gun back in this man's hand, in light of his lack of cooperation, because that impaired the ability of Dr. Namias to get at the truth of his psychological condition. So he tied the two directly together. And let me ask you another question about the whole question of what happened to the MMPI results. Those were, as I understand it, not in the possession of the government. So Did you make a request of the arbitrator to compel the production from Dr. Namias or wherever these records might be found?
Mr. Ramirez requested all of the medical records that
from
were...
From the government, as I understand it.
From the government. And the union, Mr. Ramirez's union, raised the issue with the arbitrator.
Right, but always... And I read the whole transcript, and my impression was that it was always in the context of the government has to produce this for us. And the government's response each time is, we don't have it. My question to you is, did you ever say that the arbitrator, all right, this is not presumably in the possession of the government. Mr. Arbitrator, we want you to direct Dr. Namias, to the extent that he possesses these, or Dr. Frederick, for that matter, to produce the information that we want. Did you ever make that request of the arbitrator?
I don't recall that specific request. Of course, there was a lengthy discussion about how Mr. Ramirez's due process rights were impaired based on his lack of access to that evidence at the removal decision from the start. And I also don't believe that the agency has raised the argument that Mr. Ramirez somehow failed in his duty to request this evidence, except that he did not go directly to Dr. Namias or Dr. Frederick for it. I'd also add
that... The government's answer is that we didn't have it, therefore we had no obligation to produce it. So that presumably puts the ball back in Mr. Ramirez's court to produce the evidence and to do so by requesting that the arbitrator assist if the assistance were necessary.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I'm not sure that that there's case law out there to support that it's if the government doesn't have it, that puts the burden back in Mr. Ramirez's court. In the cases that we cite, Banks versus FAA and Houston Federation of Teachers, the government agencies there also didn't have possession of the critical evidence there, and the courts found that the proper remedy was not to force disclosure of that evidence. It was to provide the employee with a constitutionally adequate removal procedure that did not take into account that evidence.
The government based its removal decision on those reports, correct? I mean, ultimately, the removal decision was based on those reports.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the reports themselves were based almost entirely on that MMPI evidence. And it's also the government's burden.
That's what I'm referring to.
Yes.
I mean, the decision appears to me to be, and I'm talking about the removal decision, it's ultimately just entirely based on those MMPI reports.
That's correct, yes. Based entirely on the conclusion that Mr. Ramirez was unfit because he failed to cooperate, which then traces directly back to the MMPI evidence. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. So unless there are pressing questions at the moment, I will reserve my time.
Okay, let's hear from the government. Ms. Murdoch-Park.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The agency proved by preponderant evidence that Mr. Ramirez failed to meet a condition of his employment, which was to carry a government-issued firearm. And to take a step back and to answer directly first, Judge Reyna, your most recent question with respect to what the agency relied upon. The agency relied upon in making its decision the report of Dr. Namias. And the report of Dr. Namias was not based solely on the MMPI-2 interpretation from Dr. Frederick, but as Dr. Namias testified, was based on a multiple hours long meeting interview with Mr. Ramirez, as well as Dr. Namias' attempt to contact Mrs. Ramirez and speak to her about what happened. After the interview, speaking with Mrs. Ramirez and reviewing the reports, Dr. Namias testified and wrote clearly in his report that not only was Mr. Ramirez not truthful in his responses, he pointed to, for example, one occasion in which Mr. Ramirez said that he was a perfect performer at work, but in fact then admitted on further questioning that he had had other problems at work before. So Dr. Namias pointed to untruthfulness, unwilling to cooperate, which was based upon his personal observations as well as Dr. Frederick's observations. Now, the removal decision that Mr. Ramirez could not carry a weapon, this was all, it began after he was accused of placing his government-issued firearm to his wife's head. And so the agency then ordered these reports. Now, of course, the agency went through the proper procedures, got the initial medical exam. The reports from the forensic psychiatrist and the interviews for the fitness for duty test, Dr. Namias could not certify that Mr. Ramirez was able to carry a government-issued firearm, and therefore he could not perform the essential functions of his duty. And the arbitrator's decision, to go to one of your questions earlier, Judge Bryson, I think a good way to characterize the arbitrator's decision in trying to give Mr. Ramirez another bite at the apple, to use my colleague's expression. It's another bite at the apple for Mr. Ramirez to show that he could carry this firearm. The arbitrator did not issue any final findings in his interim report. He instead stated that he relied on the more convincing evidence, the clearly and convincingly medical evidence from the government. He found that to be not, quote, technically meeting the preponderance of the evidence standard, but he directly tied this issue to Mr. Ramirez's choice not to respond to the questions and to the fact that Mr. Ramirez could not be cleared to carry a gun. Now, to go to some of the...
Well, now, you characterize that as giving Mr. Ramirez a second bite of the apple. He actually was giving the government a second bite of the apple, wasn't he? Because at that point, what he was saying was, if I had to stop now, government, you lose. That's the way I interpret what he was saying. Is that not fair?
I
don't think the government has proved its case at this point.
Well, Your Honor, if reading the totality of the interim report, there's no evidence that Mr. Ramirez could carry a firearm. There is no evidence that the arbitrator found he could actually conduct the duty that, or conduct the essential functions of his job.
Well, but there are two interwoven features here. One is the duty, the ability to carry the firearm. The two is the government's proved its case for dismissal. The second depends upon the first. But when he says that the government hasn't proved the second, in effect, he's saying the government hasn't proved what it needs to prove, which is he's not qualified to carry a firearm. That was certainly the way I interpreted the order of the arbitrator in the first instance.
Well, reading the arbitrator's decision, it again traces to Mr. Ramirez's unwillingness to finish or conduct these fitness for duty tests. And the arbitrator talks about Mr. Ramirez's deliberate avoidance of transparency and no reasonable effort to cooperate, his deliberately recalcitrant behavior, and that he did not want to reward this type of behavior. The arbitrator did not want to reward. And again, the arbitrator, he considered the evidence of...
But he did answer all the questions, correct? A while ago you said he did not answer all the questions. I don't see that in the record.
Yes, Your Honor, my apologies. He did not answer the questions truthfully. To give you an example...
But he did answer the questions.
My understanding is he answered all of the questions, and these were on a sort of like a Scantron form, say 500 questions, like taking the SATs or something. To give an example, Dr. Yi characterized or explained some of these answers, and to take a step back, the MMPI-2 is a standardized test. As Dr. Namias testified, that it can only be interpreted in one way. The information is put in and output comes out, and then Dr. Frederick presented his summary of that output. Dr. Yi explained in her report that Mr. Ramirez characterized himself as a person of exceptional virtue. For example, in response to the MMPI-2 test questions, he reported that he always tells the truth, never swears, never gossips, is never vain, never procrastinates, likes everyone he meets, never acts rashly, and has manners as good at home as his manners in public. And these are the types of questions that could not be interpreted because They're not. They're simply not truthful, and that's backed up by everything but that
the fact that they cannot be interpreted and that they're not truthful. That result was part of the decision to remove.
That result was incorporated into Dr. Namias's report, which formed the basis of the agency's removal decision.
Correct.
Yes. And the agency based its removal decision on Dr. Namias's report, on the fact that Dr. Namias, a forensic psychiatrist, stated that Mr. Ramirez was permanently prohibited from carrying a firearm until he could show otherwise.
Why should he not have had the opportunity to challenge this finding of truthfulness?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, he did at the arbitration hearing.
Was he given the copy of the reports and the results?
He was given a copy of Dr. Namias's report and Dr. Scott's report, the first report,
I'm talking about the test, the MMIP test.
He was not given a copy of that, Your Honor, because the agency never had it. And as Judge Bryson, you stated,
the agency relied on it.
The agency did not rely on the MMPI-2 tests.
Dr. Namias, I take it, did rely on both the test, which he said he looked at the answers, and Dr. Frederick's assessment, right?
Your Honor, I do not recall if Dr. Namias looked at the test results, but he certainly looked at Dr. Frederick's summary of the results.
Yeah.
You can see what's bothering us. Here, there was information, there was medical information that was withheld, and we're trying to understand the justification for why that wasn't provided as a threshold to the entire question of the process that was followed.
Well, first, Your Honor, the information was never in the agency's possession. It never had the MMPI-2 reports. It never had it and never relied on it. The information that...
Well, they conducted the test. You say they never had it?
I do not recall if Dr. Namias had the 500 questions and answers, or if he only had the 4-page summary that was received from Dr. Frederick interpreting the results. Dr. Namias testified as to how these results are interpreted and stated that they are always interpreted in the same manner that this is, it's always scored the same way. And so Dr. Namias incorporated that summary into his report. Now, the information that was available to Mr. Ramirez was the information that was available to the agency for review, which was the copies of the forensic psychiatrist report finding that Mr. Ramirez was not cleared to carry a gun.
Now, Dr. Namias, I take it, is not an agency employee, right?
No, Your Honor.
This was per a contract with Dr. Namias to conduct this particular investigation?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. And so the agency, I suppose, could have asked Dr. Namias for the MMPI results. I think there's somewhere in the record suggested that Dr. Namias actually has a copy of the results, but the agency did not make that request, right?
The agency did not make the request, nor did the union make the request of Dr. Namias or of Dr. Frederick himself, nor request that the arbitrator do so.
It would have certainly made this case a lot easier if you had just said, okay, let's see if Dr. Namias can produce the materials, and if he did, then issue is taken care of.
Well, to that point, Your Honor, one of the points that Dr. Namias testified to at the hearing was that these results are not given to the agency regularly because they need to be interpreted by somebody who is qualified to interpret that information. So providing a bunch of raw data would simply be unhelpful to the agency.
You can do, the agency could do exactly what it did with some of the medical information, which is say, please designate it. Mr. Ramirez, please designate a psychiatrist who will examine these and will produce them to the psychiatrist.
Because the agency did not have it in its control, then...
They could say to Dr. Namias, they have a greater relationship with Dr. Namias than Mr. Ramirez does, right? Because they contracted for him.
Yes,
services. So at least it would have been something that would have been possible for the agency to go to Dr. Namias and say, are you willing to produce these? We would like you to do that.
It could have been possible, Your Honor, but the fact that the union did not have the arbitrator compel this to occur, the agency repeatedly stated, we do not have this information, we cannot produce it to you, and there was no further action from the union on that point.
Well, now you're taking a different position. Now you're saying that Mr. Ramirez did not seek to compel production of the test. How does your position differ from the case in Houston Federation of Teachers?
Houston Federation, if I can.
That was the drug test case.
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, simply, in the drug test case, the urinalysis was the only evidence of any wrongdoing.
That was Banks.
That was Banks?
The urinalysis was Banks. That's a flight controller's case.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Houston Federation was not drugs. I'm sorry. You're right.
And I will...
Well, we can review that at some other time, but I think that case is pretty close on point here.
If I may pull that up in our briefs, Your Honor, I believe first that is not binding on this court. But in Houston Federation, I believe the plaintiffs were unable to obtain the test results, if not the urinalysis results, but the test results that were the only basis for their removal proceedings. And that certainly did not happen here. Again, Dr. Namias testified. Mr. Ramirez had a copy of Dr. Scott's report and Dr. Namias's report. He had a chance to challenge on testimony Dr. Namias, and Dr. Namias made numerous findings unrelated to the MMPI-2 results based solely on his observation of Mr. Ramirez as well as his attempt to obtain collateral information from Mrs. Ramirez. And these things all together formed the basis of the agency's decision to remove. And in Brooks, the agency is only required to present the information that it relied upon. The agency never relied on the MMPIG reports.
How can you challenge your report if you don't have access to the data the report is based on?
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Ramirez was able to challenge Dr. Namias's use of the report in his determination that he could not carry a firearm. And so he is able to, let's assume that even the report is entirely inaccurate, that Dr. Frederick, in his blind interpretation of this test, interpreted it incorrectly. Dr. Namias still had such sufficient findings in his report based on his own personal observations of Mr. Ramirez and his attempts to contact Mrs. Ramirez that he still concluded that Mr. Ramirez was not able to carry a gun. He could not perform an essential duty of his position.
Based on what we're told, could be a flawed report. How can you accept the conclusion?
Well, Mr. Ramirez was able to challenge that conclusion through Dr. Namias, but even assuming that the MMPI-2 report is completely flawed, there are still the independent findings of Dr. Namias unrelated to the report and the testimony by Dr. Namias as to the basis for it.
That's a different argument. Now you're arguing the sufficiency of the evidence that goes to the report, and that's not what we're addressing here. We're addressing evidence that was used, was relied on, that wasn't given to Mr. Ramirez so that he could effectively challenge the decision to remove him.
But respectfully, Your Honor, the MMPI-2 reports were never utilized by the agency. They were never reviewed by the agency. They were never seen by the agency. What the agency relied upon was Dr. Namias's report, which stated Mr. Ramirez
and
is permanently barred.
Namias's report that was based, at, I think, to a large extent, and you argue to a tiny extent, I guess, but it was based on those reports, on PI reports. Right?
The MMPI-2 reports, yes, were included in Dr. Namias's report.
They were included in the report?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. But there is still more than sufficient evidence that the agency has proven that Mr. Ramirez
But that's not the question here. The question is whether Mr. Ramirez should have had access to those reports in order to challenge that part of the report itself. And he didn't get it.
Yes, Your Honor, and the agency did not have the duty to provide information it did not have to Mr. Ramirez, which it did not rely upon to make its determination.
What's your legal authority for that assertion?
Loudermill, Your Honor, certainly does not state that the agency must provide every iota of information, particularly when it's not in front of the agency. And respectfully, Your Honor, there was no due process violation here. Just one additional point. One of the and I realize I'm over my time, but if I may, the union has argued that the arbitrator had no authority to order Dr. Yee's report. Dr. Yee's report is entirely consistent with the other two reports, makes the same findings, and so to the extent that the arbitrator exceeded his authority, it was harmless error. And if
what in addition to the MMPI reports did Dr. Nahima show to have in order to show that Mr. Ramirez was defensive or combative or untruthful?
Particularly, Your Honor, if you turn to appendix page 76, and that is in the midst of Dr. Ramirez's report. There are several issues. First starting with appendix page 75. Dr. Namias notes that Mr. Ramirez reported he had an outstanding track record with numerous awards, but on closer questioning, he admitted to several past problems at work. This indicates that Mr. Ramirez is not entirely truthful with Dr. Namias upon questioning. On appendix page 76, under mental status evaluation and mood, Mr. Ramirez states he doesn't describe any specific angry feelings towards his wife for allegedly falsely accusing him of a felony. According to Dr. Namias, on questioning during the hearing, he found that highly suspect, especially if this was an allegedly false report that his wife was making against him. Dr. Namias also found he found very troubling the collateral phone contact with Mrs. Ramirez and the fact that she would not discuss the incident. He explained that as well. Let's see here. He stated that the employee's lack of full cooperation due to his wife's decision not to discuss the marital problems on appendix page 77. And Dr. Namias discussed his findings in full. I believe it's from appendix pages approximately 103 to 109, where he discusses some of his findings specifically with respect to Mr. Ramirez's defensiveness and other answers that he gave during the examination that caused him concern.
Okay, any more questions? Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Murdoch-Park. Ms. Holm.
Thank you. There was some discussion of Dr. Namias' testimony, sort of elaborating upon his conclusions and his report. I'll note that Mr. Ramirez is entitled to due process at each stage of the proceedings. And so since Mr. Ramirez did not have access to the MMPI reports at the initial removal stage, he was denied due process at that point.
Did you make that argument in your briefs? I thought your briefs were focused on the failure to produce the MMPI results and Dr. Frederick's analysis at the hearing or before the hearing, but not before the agency removal. That would strike me as would have been peculiar at the hearing, particularly if no request, I mean, at the removal stage, particularly if no request was made at that point.
The briefs, I believe, address sort of both the removal decision, that it renders the initial removal decision a nullity, and it also detracts from the arbitrator's eventual decision.
Was there a request at the initial removal stage for these materials?
Mr. Ramirez requested all of the medical records created after each psychological examination.
And they produced everything in their possession.
That's correct.
But they did not produce something that wasn't in their possession at that point.
That's correct, Your Honor. Just a couple more points. So there was some discussion about other evidence in the reports that supported the proposition that Mr. Ramirez was not cooperative. If you look at page 105 of the appendix, and this is even in Dr. Namias' testimony elaborating upon his conclusion, he says that the conclusion that he was not cooperative was based primarily on the MMPI test. And in Houston Federation of Teachers, the school district argued that this performance score, to which the teachers do not have access to the underlying data or the algorithm, that the performance score was just one factor among many that could support a removal decision of a teacher. And the court found that because of its significance, it might not be the only factor, but it was a very significant factor that violated the teacher's due process rights to remove them, even if that was one significant factor.
Let me ask you a question. If you should be right about your due process argument, but set aside the argument that the whole proceeding should have been terminated as of the time that the arbitrator said, government, you haven't proved your case yet. What would be the result? Would it be to remand for the arbitrator to at least make an effort to obtain the MMPI and Dr. Frederick's report for supplementation of the record?
I think the remedy, Your Honor, would be to reinstate Mr. Ramirez and require an entirely new constitutionally adequate removal procedure from the start. If the agency still wishes to remove Mr. Ramirez, they can, complete the process all over again and either not use the MMPI evidence, or if an MMPI test is administered and it ends up being the primary basis on which the removal decision is made, that evidence needs to be provided.
Is that what you're asking this court to do? That's the prayer. What's the prayer of relief here on your part?
The relief is to reinstate Mr. Ramirez with back pay and benefits under the Back Pay Act.
Not to have this evidence made available to him for further proceedings?
I think that would certainly be better, but I think this court's cases in Stone versus FDIC, for example, say that when a due process violation occurs, the proper remedy is the employee actually in effect should stay on the rolls until he is afforded a constitutionally adequate removal procedure.
So we would vacate the removal decision?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you. Thank you both. The case is taken under submission.